This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we will give you the world. Brandy Cruz filling in for my friend Dory Monson. People are very combative on the text line today. What a crazy.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. You guys, it's almost a new year. It's the season of goodwill. Someone corrected my pronunciation of Tijuana. They said it's Tijuana. Isn't that the same? I think that's the same. Yeah, real feisty on the text line, but that's okay. I like feisty. 888-973-CHIRO. 888-973. Yeah, it's the holidays.
Be positive.
You know? Positive. Like I said, season of goodwill. Your New Year's resolution could be to be nicer on the text line. But again, I don't mind feisty. I've been watching, so I was just watching Fox and CNN. We always have them up on the screen here. And they're both covering this situation with Southwest Airlines. And gosh, I guess I didn't realize just how bad things had gotten. And I mean, we were talking about on the show yesterday how sad it was just to see people on Christmas Eve and Christmas stranded at airports, not knowing when their flights were going to take off. But apparently there have been like 2,500 flight cancellations for Southwest in the last couple days. And it has gotten so bad that their stock is dropping at Southwest. Republicans, I was just seeing on Fox, Rep. Nancy Mace says that they want an investigation into what's happening with Southwest. And the CEO of Southwest, Bob Jordan, came out, posted a video basically saying, yeah, we know that this is completely unacceptable.
Please also hear that I'm truly sorry. Here's why this giant puzzle is taking us several days to solve. Southwest is the largest carrier in the country, not only because of our value and our values, but because we built our flight schedule around communities, not hubs. I have nothing but pride and respect for the efforts of the people of Southwest who are showing up in every way. The tools we use to recover from disruption serve us well 99% of the time, but clearly we need to double down on our already existing plans to upgrade systems for these extreme circumstances so that we never again face what's happening right now.
Yeah, so they're in a situation where they just frankly cannot keep up. They cannot keep up with the delays and cancellations and trying to reschedule them. So Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg is talking about this, kind of trying to play tough guy with Southwest. And he met with Bob Jordan, who you just heard from there. He also met with union leaders that represent employees of the airline. And he has said, and he told NBC, he also told CNN this, that Southwest has an obligation to pay for the costs associated with canceled flights. If you're stuck somewhere and you need to buy food or you need to pay for a hotel.
Well, they need to take care of their passengers and they need to take care of their employees. Look, everybody understands that there is extreme weather across the country, but where most airlines saw their performance start to improve, Southwest has actually moved in the other direction. You've got passengers who are stranded. You got passengers who can't get a hold of customer service. It's an unacceptable situation.
Secretary, I know you've spoken with Southwest Airlines. Could they tell you how they fix this?
They told me in their words that they will go above and beyond their written customer service plan. I'm going to be holding them accountable for doing that.
Does that mean financial compensation?
Absolutely. At a minimum, there need to be cash refunds for the canceled flights. And they need to be taking care of passengers where they got stuck with meals, hotel compensation. Now, they've put up a website to get those kinds of requests in.
Yeah, and this is fair. I mean, Southwest had promised in writing over the summer that they were going to do this, that when it came to these mass cancellation situations, that they were going to take care of passengers. And so Pete Buttigieg is like, that's in writing, so we have something to hold them to, and I'm glad he's using such forceful language. I mean, we'll see what the administration... It's too late to do anything about what's happening right now. Obviously, this is like what's going to come. And he went on, and again, this is NBC News, saying, clearly, you know, this is something that keeps happening. There's a crisis in the airline industry, and we need to know how things are going to proceed from here.
Secretary, I want to go back to October of last year when Southwest had nearly the exact same problem. Thousands of flights canceled. How can travelers have faith in the airline and, to be frank, have faith in your department as a watchdog if these problems keep happening?
Well, what we did, especially over the course of the problems we saw this year, was press the airlines to increase their customer service commitments. They did that. They did that in writing. And now that we have that in hand, we are able to hold them accountable to a higher standard than what was possible last year. Now, again, what we have going on right now is different for Southwest, this one airline, than what we're seeing across the rest of the system. As a watchdog, we are going to hold them accountable, and we're going to have to take a deeper look at what's going on with their scheduling systems. We all understand that you can't control the weather. This has clearly crossed the line from what's an uncontrollable weather situation to something that is the airline's direct responsibility.
Yeah, I think we can all agree with that. So I think
I don't think he's taking any responsibility for not checking in on why the mistakes happened in the first place. So last year when this happened, it was the same scheduling problem. So what they're doing, they don't have a good system to schedule their flight attendants and their pilots after they get all mixed up. So these like flight attendants and pilots are saying that they're having to call their schedulers and sit on hold while they're already at hotels in the middle of trips, and they don't have a system. And that was the same problem last year. So Buttigieg didn't make sure they upgraded. It just made sure that they were going to pay for hotels for people who were inconvenienced.
Yeah, and you do wonder how much follow-through there was or should have been. Like, was that, I can see, to give Pete Buttigieg, who I like, by the way.
I know you do.
I like him less and less. I think that when he was running for president, I thought he was a really good option, comparatively speaking, to some of the other Democrats. And he's just very well-spoken and articulate. But then he kind of drank the Kool-Aid of the Biden administration.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm less hip on Pete Buttigieg than I once was. But to give him the benefit of the doubt, last October, I mean, when this started happening for the first time, I don't know that anyone really thought this was going to be a long-standing issue. So was it a one-off? And now we're realizing it's not a one-off. It truly is that they have a terrible system in place.
But I think, like you said, with the Biden administration, it's like there's no follow-through. So Harris is the border czar. Is there a follow-through? She hasn't even been there. He's the airline transportation czar, and is there any follow through?
You say the right things, but are you actually doing something behind the scenes? And so hopefully the second time is a charge, is the charm for Mr. Pete Buttigieg.
Right.
Coming up next on the Fastest 15, there have been about 200 bills that have been pre-filed heading into the upcoming legislative session. And I was going over them last night, every single one of the, I think there's just over 200. And so basically, if you don't know, you could start pre-filing bills in December for the legislative session. And it gives us a peek at what their priorities are going to be. And I already knew that I was going to be disappointed. You know, Democrats, after what happened in 2020 and 2021 with, you know, their quote unquote police reform legislation, their Band-Aid fix to the Blake decision, which rendered our state's felony drug possession law just irrelevant, and the police pursuit law that they pushed through that has had disastrous consequences on the erosion of public safety and law and order. You know, they went through that in 2020, 2021, completely unapologetic for what had happened. And then all of a sudden, in the summer of 2022, Democrats were like, oh, we care about public safety now. I mean, you look at all the Democrats in close congressional races, like Congresswoman Kim Schreier in the 8th. All of her ads were about, oh, I supporting the police, you know, XYZ. You look at Governor Jay Inslee. Governor Jay Inslee didn't say jack 2 years ago during the police defunding debate. And then all of a sudden he comes out in the summer out of nowhere, not even prompted, and said, police defunding? I don't support police defunding. And then he stood in front of law enforcement at some press conference down at the Criminal Justice Training Commission and laid out his plan to help recruit more officers. Attorney General Bob Ferguson, what did he say in the summer of 2020 when businesses were being ransacked in Seattle and Bellevue? He didn't say anything. And then he comes out in June and announces a retail theft task force. And of course, it's because 2022 was an important election year. Election years have a way of making people appear more moderate than they are, and then they just go back to their old way of doing things. And that's what we're seeing from Democrats in Olympia as we race toward the new legislative session. Out of these 200 pre-filed bills, and some are from Republicans, some are from Democrats, do you think there's one bill in there, one bill that makes good on their promises to revisit the police pursuit law? No. Do you think there's a bill in there that makes good on their pledges to find a better solution for the Blake decision? No. You know, I was looking back at some of the Democrats who had close reelection campaigns, like State Senator Emily Randall, the Democrat over in the Bremerton area. She had it just in September, the end of September. She came out and she had this, there was a candidate form where she said, I want to find a fix for the Blake decision, where she said that some of the stuff they pushed through in 2021, like police pursuit, had unintended consequences, and where she said that she wants to find fixes for those things. When I look at the list of 200 prefiled bills, do I see anything from Senator Emily Randall to fix what she said she was going to fix? Of course not. Because they're just giving voters lip service until an election and until they win. And then they go back to, and I knew, we knew this was what was going to happen. Then they just go back to what they were doing in 2020, in 2021, pushing forward proposals that make life easier for criminals. They've got a proposal that would make it easier to sue individual police officers. And they're just not doing any of the public safety-driven, crime-driven stuff that they made us believe, didn't make me believe, but made some voters believe that they really cared about in the summer. And so I just, there was this bill I wanted to kind of focus on today, and it was pre-filed a couple weeks ago. It hasn't gotten a ton of attention. Now it's starting to get a little bit more, but State Rep. Tara Simmons. She's a Democrat. And look, I like Tara Simmons. I like her story. She is the first formerly incarcerated person to serve in the Washington State House. And, you know, she has a great story of turning her life around, which is what we should wish for anyone to be able to, if they find themselves in a position where they're a convicted felon, they're serving time. We want them to be able to turn their lives around and do something productive. And I think it's hard to argue the fact that she has done that. And I get that a lot of the bills that she introduces have to do with incarceration. She is a formerly incarcerated person. There are probably things she experienced behind bars that she would like to fix as part of the system. But when you're a lawmaker, you also have to look out for what's in the best interest of the entire state, not just a small segment of people who are serving time in prison. So Tara Simmons has introduced a bill, House Bill 1024, if you want to go take a look at it. And what would it do? It would raise the pay for prison inmates. So right now in Washington, prison inmates get anywhere from 65 cents to $2.70 an hour, depending on the job that they do behind bars. She wants it to be the minimum wage. She wants people who are working outside the prison system or inside the prison system to get the minimum wage. And I think on its face, I'm like, okay, you know, we don't need people like working slave labor if they're doing an actual job behind prison walls. But here's the thing. I don't see anything from Democrats in these 200 prefiled bills that look to improve the economic outlook for regular law-abiding citizens. You know, here you're pushing this bill to pay felons more in prison. What about a break in the gas tax for regular, hardworking Washingtonians who are doing everything right? What about a little break in the sales tax? The Democrats would never consider that. Yet here they are pushing a bill to pay prison inmates more. And I just wonder, like, don't people see what's wrong with that? And it goes back to this prioritization of making the lives of criminals easier and then not caring if you make the lives of law-abiding citizens more difficult. And that's just deeply bothersome to me. And the other element of this bill from Representative Tara Simmons is that taxpayers will have to bear more of a burden for the cost of someone's incarceration. So right now, if a judge determines that you have the means, you are, as a convicted felon, required to help work to offset some of the cost of your incarceration. Or let's say you get sentenced and you're like wealthy and they think that you can pay for some of the cost of your incarceration. A judge can order that you do that, which makes a lot of sense. If you're some rich person who committed a felony and you've got a bunch of money, why should the taxpayers have to bear the burden of the cost of your incarceration? Why would you not have to offset some of that? And then for other convicted felons who don't go into the prison system wealthy, they can work jobs in prison and some of that money can go to offset the cost of their incarceration. But Tara Simmons in this bill wants to make that illegal, where the state can no longer require any inmate, regardless of their financial status, to pay to help offset the cost of their incarceration. And who's gonna now pay the difference? The taxpayers. It is then going to cost the taxpayers more to house these prison inmates. So again, if you raise the minimum wage for inmates working behind bars, the taxpayers bear the cost of that. If you no longer require inmates to pay for the cost of their own incarceration, the taxpayers are going to bear the burden of that. So not only do we have proposals that are making life easier for convicted felons. But it's making it easier for convicted felons at the expense of those of us who are out working hard, minding our own business, following the laws. And then on the back end, we can't even get anything to balance that out. You can't give us a tiny little break on the gas tax. You can't give us a tiny little break on the sales tax. After everything the people of the state have been through in the last 3 years, rising crime, inflation through the roof, crazy gas prices, the pandemic, people losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods, and you can't muster a single thing to help them, to let them keep a little bit more of their money. Yet in the same time, the same legislative session, you're trying to push through bills that'll make things a little bit easier financially on convicted felons. Help me. Help me, Nicole. Help me understand that mindset, that mentality. I am not a lock them up, throw away the key person. I believe that we have to make sure people come out of prison in a better position. I believe that we have, because the vast majority of people are, unless you're in life, serving life without parole, you're going to be out of prison someday. We need to make sure that they can turn their lives around, that they can walk out and they're on a better trajectory. So I'm not this person that's like, throw everyone in prison, lock up, then let them out. But I don't understand, and there's no argument you can make to me that will make me understand the prioritization of criminals at the expense of law-abiding taxpayers.
No, I'm with you on that. But also, I was just told this week by somebody that works in the prison system that they are very overworked. There's not enough people working there. However, there's also not very many inmates. They don't have as many inmates as they used to because they're not getting locked up.
Well, they cut most people loose during the pandemic.
So I think everyone will tell you crime is out of control right now, but yet we have less people in jail and we want to pay them more. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And I'd be fine with the minimum wage thing. And I want to reiterate that because it's not like, and again, I come to this as a moderate independent. I really believe in criminal justice reform that's meaningful. I don't want people to get out of prison and be, sent out with $20 in their pocket and then have to rebuild their lives. I don't think that that's productive for the former inmate, and I don't think it's productive for society as a whole. So I do think you need reasonable criminal justice reform. I don't want people serving hard time for, low-level drug offenses, all of those things. But at the very least, if you're going to push bills to improve the lives of convicted felons, for the love of God, push a matching bill that will also help improve the lives of people who pay their taxes and follow the law. I mean, we keep electing the same people who push these things, and then they promise in the lead up to the midterm election that they cared about crime, they cared about fixing some of the things they broke in 2021. Go read. All you do, just Google pre-filed bills Olympia. Go read the 200 pre-filed bills that paint a picture of the legislative priorities of the party in power. And you tell me that those priorities align with what they wanted us to believe their priorities were in the lead up to the midterm election. Because the things don't jive. And it should be disappointing for any of us who work hard. It should be disappointing for any of us who follow the law to see where their priorities truly lie. Nicole, we're going to continue. Can we turn the fastest 15 into a fastest 30?
Well, we'll continue it a little bit later because I just got word that Dave Wyman is going to make it in on time. And he will be here for the next
segment. He's going to come in, so I have to delay. Because I had so many stories in the fastest 15 that I didn't get to because I went on a long, long rant in the fastest 15. And that has been your fastest 15 minutes in the news.
This has been the fastest 15 minutes in the news. Fast. Dory's fastest 15.
A world of news in a tiny 15-minute package just for you. So we have Dave Wyman. He couldn't join us yesterday on Tuesdays with Wyman, but he is going to join us next.
Yeah, he's going to fill in for Brock, apparently, today.
Oh, so. Good. Okay, because I have a bunch of things to ask Dave Wyman about. Poor, poor Russell Wilson. Much more ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Brandi Cruz filling in. You sweet man. He knew. I needed an easy win today.
The fix was in, apparently.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait. Nicole and I are going to see Adele in February. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
I'm not much of a fan, but I would have got
it
eventually.
You're not invited.
Is there anyone you want to see that bad?
Don't worry, I'm not invited.
Is there? Because okay. Adele's like my... So when Amy Winehouse died, I was so disappointed that I never went to see her, and I wouldn't have a chance. So when Adele came up in Vegas, and the tickets were more than I wanted to spend, but I was like, I'm not going to make that same mistake again. Is there anybody who you either regret not seeing before they died or want to see before they die?
Not really. I got to see Rush before...
Rush Limbaugh?
No, the band Rush.
Oh,
Geddy Lee and yeah, and Neil Peart, who passed away from brain cancer a few years ago, three or four years ago. So, yeah, I got to see them. So, no, yeah. And then, you know, you go and see some of those things, and there's some disappointment, a little bit, like, I can't really hit the high note anymore, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, no, I saw so many concerts when I went to Stanford. Well, first of all, in Reno, that's where I first saw Rush and... You know, I think we saw Ted Nugent. But then when I went to Stanford, you know, we used to go every concert there was.
Yeah.
You know, at the Cal Palace or the Oakland Coliseum. I mean, we were always going to concerts. That's probably why I have ringing in my ears right now or permanently.
Well, that's good because Dory's good at that too, isn't he, Nicole? Dory, he'll go to a concert. He does that a lot in Vegas. I mean, he just sent us to a concert in Vegas. Which was
like
really
classics.
Nice of him.
Yeah, he likes to see them.
What'd you
classics.
See? What did he send you to?
He went to, what was the guy's name again?
Luke Bryan.
Luke Bryan. Yeah, he was, Dory got us front row tickets.
Wow.
I've never sat front row to anything.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we could have touched him. We didn't, because that would be inappropriate without his consent. But we were front row. So I'm glad you came on today, even though you ditched us yesterday, because I had so many. Usually I have to rely on Nicole, like, hey, help me figure out what to ask Dave about related to football. But I am enthralled by the Russell Wilson saga.
Mm.
I am enthralled. Is he doing as bad as the internet says he's doing?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's not just, you know, angry Seahawk fans. It's like Troy Aikman. You know, the guys that are analysts are going, I have no idea why he threw that ball or, you know, he had a pick the other day on I guess that was Christmas Day, where it was exactly like 2020. They were playing at the Rams and in that same building, he could have in 2020 ran for 20 yards. Instead, he hoists it up into the end zone, gets picked off. And then that's when Pete started to, you know, rein him back in. And then that's where some of the animosity started started before that. But, you know, still after that season, that's when it kind of was like, oh, there's a trade partner here and there. And maybe, you know, because Pete was like trying to rein him back in. Like, and I think what's going on right now is, that like a lot of times Russ needs to be saved from himself.
Mm.
And Pete did that for him. And I don't think he realized it or appreciated it because, you know, yeah, he's throwing the ball up for grabs. He's been sacked a lot. And, you know, we talked to an offensive lineman from Denver named Mark Schlereth who does the games and stuff. And he gets really angry when people constantly blame the offensive line for sacks. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's on the quarterback, or sometimes it's on the tight end or running back that's supposed to make a block. That everybody, oh, their offensive line's terrible. No, your quarterback's holding the ball too long.
Yeah.
So, and look, I'm not out to trash Russ. I love him for what he did for us, but I said this in the very beginning. He got too big for his britches. Sorry, he did. He all of a sudden, I think he started listening to his agent, and his agent was, you know, like, I remember Eddie Murphy one time came on. He was saying how he's a good comedian, actor, and his agent was like, "You can do anything. Like you can dance, you can sing." And he's like, "No."
You stick to what I'm good at.
Yeah. So, and I think that's kind of what Mark Rogers. He has one client. He's got too much time on his hands, and it's Russ. And he's, you know, I feel like that's where a lot of it came from. He just he was like, "I'm the show." You know, there was a big article in ESPN, and the thing that bothered me the most was that. He was, you know, he always said, yeah, I'm all about winning. But there was a fair amount of time that he was talking about being MVP and getting MVP votes. Like, no, just go play.
Go play,
win games, the MVP, all that stuff, that will come later. So, and I don't think that's disputed. I think that was talked about. And it's depends on how you feel about it. Me, having been a former player, I would not appreciate that somebody's talking about, well, you know, and he's not talking about it like in the locker room probably or anything like that, but it's out there in the media that's something that he really desires. Like, hey, let's win some games, man.
Yeah, and then the rest of that will come. But I think you got to the heart of what my question was, which on Twitter especially and sort of that whole pundit world, It's hard to tell. I couldn't tell if it was like sour grapes from Seahawks fans just wanting some him to be painted as horrible, or if he really just is not doing well. And it sounds like it's a little bit.
He's not doing well. That's for sure. There's nothing that resembles what he's doing now. Nothing that resembles what he did here.
You mentioned the O-line. There was this blow up on the sidelines during that Christmas Day game. And I wonder how much truth there was to it. But basically, the backup quarterback and the O-line were in an argument because Russ had been sacked a couple times. And the allegation is that his offensive linemen were not going to help him up. Did you see that?
I saw the little, you know.
Tiff.
Yeah, on the sidelines and things like that. I don't think we have tiffs in the NFL.
Tiff? It was just a little disagreement. A little tiff on the sidelines. But it did look like, I saw some of the clips, it did not look like they were rushing to help him up.
Yeah, I don't, you know, and maybe like he's alienated himself a little bit from those guys. And, you know, he's on kind of his own program. Nobody really knows what he's about. I mean, remember, it took a long time to kind of get used to Russ. I mean, I remember making the joke that, like, are we in an action movie trailer right now? Because he would be like, he would say things like, failure's not an option. Like, geez, Mission Impossible 3 catch line or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, that's the way he was. So I don't know if people there and his teammates get him, you know, whereas we were kind of like, oh, yeah, that's just Russ. He's kind of corny. But, man, kid can play. He's always nice. He always had the entourage going around with him, but they were always super nice people. I've always told the story about Sierra and how, like, she let me in the elevator because, you know, the security guy was like, get the next one, pal. She's like, no, he's with us. And so I was at the team hotel. I got to get, you know, they were all super nice. But I don't know when somebody said this. I think it was a guy on NFL Network was talking about how if you make that much money, $250 million, you better be a really, really good player or a really, really good dude. And I don't know that I think he's a good dude. I do. But
yeah, but is that worth you being a good dude worth $250 million?
Well, no.
That's not what they're paying you for.
But your teammates won't turn on you at least, right? Yeah. The fans and the coaches and the management and all that, ownership, yeah, they will. But at least, you know, if everybody likes you. And I think he's likable and all that, but I just think people don't really get him there.
So they fire their head coach, Nathaniel Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
And how much that... It was because of Russell or his handling of Russell. And then what do you do with Russell Wilson from here?
It's a good question. I mean, look, there are worse things going on in the NFL as far as that goes.
And but the nothing Seahawks, quite as saucy.
Yeah, this one is definitely. But if you look at like the Arizona Cardinals, they invested a whole bunch of money in their GM, a whole bunch of money in their coach, and a whole bunch of money in their quarterback for a long time. And they're awful. They're on a 6-game losing streak right now. And so, yeah, I don't know how you get out of that. I mean, I don't know how I'd have to look it up. How much is guaranteed and things like that? And what would you do? Would you cut him? I mean, is he at that point? I don't think so. But, you know, I kind of feel sorry for Nathaniel Hackett. He's supposed to be a really good coach and it just didn't blend. It didn't work with Russell Wilson. So and I don't know how much he had to compromise what he wanted to do because Pete wasn't going to do that. Pete wasn't going to compromise it. Like, this is a run team. We're going to do this and that. We're going to take our deep shots. But, you know, the second that it didn't fit into what they're doing, and I'm sorry, I'll take Pete Carroll any day over Russ. Pete's been around the league for forever. So, yeah, I think, and Jody Allen said it, the owner, that we went with culture rather than an individual player.
Well, yeah, I thought it was interesting. Here it is.
Rush? On.
I just said that because I thought maybe he was going to do it. Okay.
A guy who used to be... Oh, Phil Collins.
Huh? Phil Collins.
Or...
No, it's a band.
Okay.
Oh, Genesis.
There you go.
I would have never got that.
Really?
See, he was even in that. I've never got that. I've never even heard of them.
When I do that, usually Dory picks up on it. And so thank you.
No. Well, I think he was just making up for my Adele gimme at the beginning.
That wasn't a gimme.
All right, Dave Wyman, stick around. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about the Seahawks. Apparently, they still have a chance. You're saying there's a chance. And also, I wanted to ask you about this Dolphins quarterback and some of the concussions he's had and sort of what the league should do with him. From there, we'll be right back. headphones on, I pinch my hand in the headphones.
ABBA.
Ding, ding, ding. It's ABBA.
You know...
What? Really?
Really, really.
Wow.
I was going to say Paula Abdul, which wouldn't have been a bad guess, right?
Yeah.
I pinched my hands in the headphones. That was really... That actually hurt quite a bit. I take this competition very seriously.
Aren't you getting hurt?
I know, right? Speaking of injuries.
Randy Cruz, doubtful.
I know, down. Who would fill in for me tomorrow? The Dolphins quarterback has had several concussions in the past few games. What is the, first of all, I mean, these have been like bad concussions too. And I guess what's the protocol for whether he can or should continue to play?
Well, first of all, anybody I think that says the NFL isn't handling it right and everything, I mean, they are so careful about that stuff. That's why you see these ridiculous penalties now.
Yeah.
You know, and when you look at it a lot of times, and if you're not a big NFL fan or whatever, just tell me how many times they call a helmet-to-helmet hit on a defender when it's the offensive player that lowers his head.
Yeah.
You know, and because that's a natural, like if somebody throws something at you, right? You're going to crunch forward, right? And guess what happens? Your head comes down. So, you know, there's so many ridiculous penalties that, you know, there's no way you could say, well, the NFL is, you know, barbaric. And I mean, they're making some of the most ridiculous calls. They're just tackles. And so, yeah, I mean, I saw what happened. I know it was really disturbing. Like, I used to jokingly call it zombie arms, like when somebody got hit and their arms just go up. And with Tagovailoa, he had like his fingers were cramping. It was really disturbing, you know. So they get him off the field and, you know, and I guess the one thing I know from when I was in college, and this was early, this is back in like 1983, I got like 3 or 4 concussions in a row within like a 8-week period, and they were like, you get another one and we're gonna have to shut you down.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and it was a scary feeling. You know what's weird about that?
What?
I got one concussion in the NFL, and well, I don't know if it, you know, I'm sure I had lots of concussions, but the only time it affected me is like I had no idea where I was.
Mid-game?
Yeah, or all of a sudden I'd look in the sidelines and they're sending the signals in and I'm like, yeah.
Oh, but, my God.
But
see,
one time,
that's why you don't mess around with this stuff.
Yeah, but... Well, I did. I had one time in a game, and I had like my best game. I was concussed, and I told the other linebacker, "You got to get the signals." And I just ran around and made plays. I didn't know what the hell
Dave
the defense
Lyman.
Was.
Dave.
Huh? See, I've had 5, goodness. I think 6 concussions.
From what?
Poverty as a child. That's what I always tell people. Playing frisbee on the roof. You know, all those sorts of things you do when you're trying to make your own fun. No, I got a couple. I got one in volleyball. I got one doing a story in college when I was in the College of Journalism on plane de-icing. Mm. And I went and slipped out on the ice. I should have known there was ice. I mean, not a story. But it still affects me to this day. And I remember when I was at Fox 13, I never used a teleprompter because I came from radio and a teleprompter was just sort of foreign to me. And so that was very unusual in TV to have someone who wasn't using one. And so, you know, the production crew got used to that, not having to man it. But then I'd have days or weeks where I couldn't, my word recall was terrible. Mm. And I was just having a bad week. And I remember talking to my boss like, hey, I'm going to have to, depending on the day, maybe use a prompter and change the way I'm doing things. So I think better safe than sorry with this guy is fine. I guess Teddy Bridgewater, the backup QB, is going to fill in for him. They're going to play the Patriots on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Look, here's how I would look at it. I mean, if you're, like I said, if you're a casual fan, whatever, the NFL, there's no way they're going to risk him going out there and having some ugly scene again. You know, I mean, so I said earlier, well, it's kind of up to him and how he feels. I mean, the player's always going to want to go play. Mm-hmm. But the NFL... They hate that
stuff.
Even
though they're in the hunt, though. Even though playoffs is not a given, it's a must-win for them.
Yeah, there's 7 from the AFC that go and 7 from the NFC, and they're the 7th. So, you know, they have to win some games. And Teddy Bridgewater is pretty good. But, yeah, the NFL always errs on the side of, like, that's something that is ugly that would, you know, lose them money. So they don't care about the Dolphins going to, you know, whether they're going to the playoffs or not. They're going to do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah, I think that's the right decision. I mean, if it's they're doing it for money, that's kind of sad. But, you know, want somebody to have long-term impacts. Quickly, the Seahawks, they are still in the hunt as well. Do you have confidence?
Well, it's going to be, you know, it's like, I think I saw a calculator. It was like 59% chance because of the opponents that the Commanders and the Giants have. And then the Seahawks obviously have to win their next two. So they'd be 9-8, which is exactly what I predicted at the beginning of the year. Everybody else was like, oh, 5 wins, 4 wins. I'm like, you got to give Pete and John credit because they have always done a good job. So I think I had the highest, you know, prediction of 9-8. So hopefully they win these last two. And, you know, if the Giants lose or, you know, the Commanders lose and they have pretty tough remaining schedules, they might be able to get in somehow.
Yeah, even if we don't, I will admit there is a little part of me that is on Team Salty with Russell Wilson, and I still get joy out of watching them do poorly. Is that mean?
No.
Am I a bad human being?
Well, listen, if you are rooting against the Broncos, you're more than welcome to do that. Probably. It's encouraged because we get a higher draft choice based on their futility.
Oh, that's right, because the Wilson deal.
Yeah. So now I think it's third or fourth.
Nice.
Queen.
Oh, they've okay. Got it.
Well, we were going to talk about Costco chickens, but I guess we'll have to save that for the next time I fill in on a Tuesday.
I can't wait.
Dave Wyman, 3-1 today. I did poorly as expected.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about my show hours. No, I'm on from 2 to
no,
7.
No, you're on from 3 to 1.
3 to 1.
3 p.m.
Like she's
to
backwards, first of all.
No, I'm never good at this game. Thank you, Dave. All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Brandi Crews filling in for Dori Monson, the big lead at 2, coming up next.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone.